That leads me to 1017, which is probably the legislation I'm proudest of. My main part in that was to put in a core curriculum, which we'd never had. But I would say the early childhood bill leads me to remember what I love best about House Bill 1017. Not just the fact that it had the money in it to invest in improvements to education, strengthening education, but also the fact that it left so much work to be done. There was such a large agenda, big picture, that every one of the sections, or almost every one of the sections, begged to be improved. So my particular part in 1017 was the definition of the core curriculum and defining what any person should know and be able to do if he or she were interested in going to college. Establishing that core was the most important thing to me, and it had six basic subjects, not just math and science. Included the arts and our culture, history.
And math.
Definitely had math and science and English. But it also had history and geography and the arts. There were six disciplines mentioned in the bill so that we would know who we are as a people. We would know our history and the history of the United States and world history and geography and where we are in the world and the global economy. So it was an overarching definition of the core, and we had never had that. But at any rate, each section of 1017 was different from the other. And the section that was the most glaring in need of improvement was the alternative certification for teachers. So that's the one Don McCorkle and I took on as a priority the following year after 1017 passed in 1990. Don and I then went after the preparation of teachers, because certifying teachers and the certification of teachers made us look at how were they prepared in the first place, and why couldn't David Boren or Robert Henry or any other really well-educated person step into the classroom and help us out and help students out and give them a sense of history. They couldn't because they weren't certified to teach. We came up with doorways into certification as a notion, and so that an alternative certification could cover life experience. If you had a law degree instead of a teacher's degree, you still could be deemed qualified to teach. And how could we attract these people instead of screening them out and forbidding them to set foot in a classroom? So we found out that what we did in the bill, and we only did it for math, science, and foreign language teachers, the shortage areas, made it even more bureaucratic for them to comply and come into the teaching field than the existing law. And so we worked with really a three-year project to really strengthen teacher certification, to revamp the education hours for a teacher. In the first place, we said a teacher had to have more than 1 year of English to be qualified to teach. The standards were very low for getting into education. And so we revamped those and tightened them. You know, you didn't even have to have more than 1 hour of math to be a math teacher in an elementary school. More later. But anyway, that's just one example of what we did in each section of the bill. And it was a really big picture, big thinking, far-reaching bill. And Henry Bellman, Republican, was governor. Steve Lewis, Democrat, Speaker of the House. Bob Cullison, Democrat, President pro tem. We met and met and met. Steve Lewis passed it in the House just by taking out a few things. They took out a big section on punishment. They stripped it of that. Years later, Bruce Niemey came back and worked on that. But they took out some things to pass it easily in the House from the original report. And I should say that the original report is some of the best work done in Oklahoma. We had a Task Force 2000 that Henry Bellman and the Speaker and the President of the Senate had to agree on the membership of the chairman. Everyone, all two branches, three entities, put people on the task force. none of whom could be a legislator. The governor, the speaker, and the president had to agree on a chip. They agreed on George Singer from Tulsa. George Singer and his task force wrote the most wonderful report. I mean, it is really a well-worded report. The gist of it was outcomes. Let us look at outcomes instead of focusing on all these rules and regs. You know how the education law book is that thick. We're going to look at how well students were doing. How are they coming through the system? How are they doing on the way in? And how ready were they for life after school? Were they ready for college? Were they ready for the world of work? Were they ready for the world of citizenship and voting? Not very. So I would call them the readiness issues. The whole perspective of the legislation was the readiness issues. Were seventh graders ready for the eighth grade? Could they do that level of work? And usually no is the answer. So we were lagging at every level. It isn't just that we were number 50 or 49 in funding for education. We were lagging in standards and how well our students were doing, better than what we paid for sure. At any rate, by the time we finished with 1017, we had all these chunks to work on. I mean, it gave us a menu for the future.
Well, the reform, as I have here, the sections, reforms directly relating to student performance, mm-hmm. reforms relating to the compensation and training of teachers.
Right.
We might point out that in 92 and 93, the teacher's beginning salary was $20,460. And today, it is a starting salary now of $29,174 and average salaries of $38,772. Which could go higher, but that shows you the jump from 92 to 2012.
Oh, I'm so glad you have those exact numbers.
That's over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
That was jump-started by House Bill 1017, reforms relating to accountability and the structure of schools and funding issues.
Yeah.
That's the overall structure of 1017.
That's good. I really appreciate that overview. Those are the four points of the compass there. So the issue I started to talk about was alternative certification. That was one of accountability. So the certification, we just thought there should be more than one way to get help for students. If teachers have only had 1 year of math or science, and we have a scientist who's ready to come in from an oil company or a gas company or any other company and give his or her expertise, we'll take advantage of them. If in other ways they're good communicators, love kids, and want to help out in the elementary schools. So we carved out a few exceptions and created substitute teacher standards. We just did some things to strengthen the teacher preparation, and that's just one example. Early childhood was another where we strengthen that.
But when we look at House Bill 1017 laying such a foundation for what we have today, mm-hmm. just something very basic is pointing out here is that requiring school board members to have a high school diploma or GED. And it's almost embarrassing to think that in the 90s, early 90s, that had to be a point of reform.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, Kara Gay Wilson at the time, Kara Gay Neal now, had recommended herself out of a job. She was a county superintendent when she served on this task force, and she recommended that office be abolished.
She did, right.
She became abolished, and she was just a great resource. We need something in a county with a school district as large as Tulsa's, which was 40,000 students. We need an overall coordinator, or it's helpful to have one, and I think that she's been acting in that capacity in many ways for many years as a catalyst.
There are many points to this House Bill 1017 that we haven't gotten into. Some of them seem so obvious that you'd want to be working on them. But there was opposition to House Bill 1017. And as I recall, five legislators here from the Tulsa area were holdouts on this.
Yeah.
And why were they?
That really had to do with one of our senators being the next minority leader. Because one of Tulsa's senators was going to be thwarted in that ambition by the Oklahoma City group if they didn't oppose this bill. This was the Republican Party really ganging up against Henry Bellman, their Republican governor. So it was a nasty infight. They were just trying to keep it from passing.
Why were these Republicans so opposed to 1017?
Well, philosophically, I could probably say they were against the money to pay for it. You know, they're for education, but they're against the money to pay for it. And that's often the case with people who say they're for education, but then they're not for doing anything to pay for it. They believe in a free lunch, I guess. But at any rate, there was this group of five senators who were pledged to one of their number as being the next minority leader.
And who was that?
The Senate was controlled by Democrats.
And who was that person?
And that would have been Charles Fort. And he was the dean of our delegation. He was the longest serving senator from Tulsa. He had been in the House and was then in the Senate. Also, there was something going on that was some kind of personal situation in Norman, Moore, and Oklahoma City with Henry Bellman in the Republican Party. And I'm not sure what that was. I really don't know, but I know those two issues sort of combined to present a united front against 1017 from the Republican Party. But they didn't make it happen because Olin Branstetter from Ponca City broke ranks with them. He didn't care about who was the next minority leader. He was there to serve people and do the best for children, and by darn it, he was going to vote for it and work on it. He worked with us every step of the way on that. And it wasn't just the funding that made it controversial. It was also the early childhood provision. The far right called it a nanny bill or a nanny land. We were going to remember what I said about the big lie works? They kept saying that we parents would be forced to send our children to four-year-old programs. No, it was purely voluntary. But people believed in this nanny state that was created by the far right. It was purely a figment of their imagination. Nowhere in the bill, and nowhere in subsequent bills. So anyway, this group of senators were not successful in blocking the bill. So in spite of their anti-education or anti-Henry Bellman stand, the bill passed by one vote. And it passed because of a bill we had on sales tax paid on food. If we would exempt poor people up to whatever the poverty rate was, and it changed every year, they would get a rebate. And I think the average was $50 a year that the poorest person in Oklahoma would pay for a year's worth of food. So that person could apply and get a rebate. We've had that in the law ever since 1017 passed because we subtracted it from the total. You know, we had a mixed tax base to fund the bill, a little income tax, a little corporate, a little sales, a little this, a little that. It was supposed to be a broad-based tax. We subtracted that by $20,000 the first year because the bill brought in about $240 million, and then we subtracted $20 to give what was projected to be the rebate on food. So the last lone Democrat, and they flipped a coin to see who would be the one who would get to switch votes and be a yes vote instead of a no vote, and that's how we got our last vote.
On a flip of a coin?
Mm-hmm.
Truly?
Mm-hmm.
And who flipped the coins?
I don't know. Maybe it was Vicki Miles LaGrange. She's the one who prayed over us. She's now a judge. She was Senator LaGrange. Maybe she's the one who flipped the coin. But four of them were ready to vote for it. They all had the same reason. They didn't want to vote for it because of poor people in their district. And they were from the poorest Senate districts in the state. Larry Dickerson, who's now deceased, was also part of that group who didn't want to vote for the bill because of poverty in his area. But Hooper of Lawton, you know, there were others who were using that same reason not to vote for it. And so the person who won the coin toss was Senator Frank Sheridan from Henrietta.
To the great credit of Governor Bellman, who probably, as we've gone through this, could just brand him the 1017 governor.
Yeah,
he was.
Was to me.
He would not back down from this, even in the fight of his own party.
Yeah.
Didn't care. He knew how important all this reform was.
Yeah.
Did he personally offer encouragement to you people?
You know, in a way, I want to say it wasn't his problem. It was our problem in the Senate. But in another way, of course, he was there all the way, being very bullheaded, I will say. Various members said, okay, if we can't do it this week, let's call it off. It's taking up the whole session. Then we had teachers marching around the Capitol in the rain saying, please pass this bill, and other people for it, including Republicans outside the legislature, backing Henry Bellman up. So it was a tough bill, but I think the thing that made it controversial most of all was the fact that it had money in it. And we had that sequestered. We had it put in a separate fund, like a lockbox. Unfortunately, the lockbox's money went down just the way all the other state money went down whenever there was a cut. So there was nothing that made it exempt. We had a lot of other parts of that bill, some of which involved contracts with teachers. Even now, they grapple with this thing that grew out of 1017, which was paying teachers for extra work. Another thing we did at the elementary school level was an amendment that Herb Rosell from Tahlequah put in, which was the amendment to require a teacher assistant for all those teachers in grades with poverty-level children. There were just so many parts of the bill that were helpful to better education and more attention to individual students and smaller class sizes. Part of the philosophy was to take the cap off teacher salaries, but that's never been done. We still have the cap, but we have additional reasons for teachers to get money for performance. That was one of those bills that grew out of 1017 that called for national board certification. And so that's like a contract. You can't abrogate that. I mean, once you have entered into a contract with a teacher, that is something you're bound to do.